Well, it's that time of the year again. Growing up, we used to refer to it as the silly season. Everyone around us seems to take leave of their senses at a rapidly increasing rate until the end of the year, when everyone breathes a sigh of relief that it's finally all over for another year. But it's far worse than just the silly season. It's the most deceptive season of the year, incorporating one of the most, if not the most, satanic of festivals, the festival now known as Christmas. I can't think of another festival that breaks so many of God's laws. In fact, it breaks, or encourages the breaking, of every one of the Ten Commandments. It was originally dedicated to the worship of a pagan god. It incorporates a raft of idols and rituals, and if a pagan festival with Christ's very name in it isn't taking God's name in vain, then what is? It plainly isn't one of God's Sabbaths, and if God had intended us to commemorate Christ's physical birth, surely the exact date and time would have been recorded and referred to throughout the entire Bible, as God's feast days are. It makes a mockery out of the father figure and government in general. It includes ancient rituals of cross-dressing, encourages fornication and adultery, with traditions like kissing under the mistletoe, along with the drunken revelry at office parties and the like. You only have to spend an hour or so in any major hospital emergency unit around Christmas time, and you'll witness an increase in domestic violence, drink and drug-related car accidents, not to mention those that have been injured, and sometimes even trampled to death, trying to get to the must-have whatever for the year. On that note, I don't know if you saw the news article posted on the church website earlier this week. A Thanksgiving shopper is facing criminal charges after police say she pulled a stun gun in a dispute over a shopping cart outside of a Walmart store. I don't know quite what the dispute was over, but I highly doubt it would be worth the $10,000 fine or 18-month jail sentence that she now faces. With all the presents going around, it's a field day for burglary, with insurance companies now offering extra premiums to cover loss of Christmas presents. Then on top of that, you have corporate theft. We barely get past Christmas and the sales start, where the shops lower the inflated prices that they fleeced the populace with just a few weeks before in the run-up to Christmas, but now at a much reduced price, not for the shoppers' benefit, but so they can empty the stores of all the stock in time to refill them for the next commercial festival. The whole advertising sector is underpinned by coveting. Then there are gift lists that are sent to Santa and subsequent comparisons of what I got for Christmas. When it comes to bearing false witness, however, this season exposes us to an onslaught of deception. It is a set of lies wrapped up in more lies with a slight dusting of truth in an attempt to give it some level of authenticity. What I'd like to do today is to focus on the degree of deception that surrounds this time of year, and to encourage us all to stay very, very aware of who is really behind it all. How in an age where everything needs to be scientifically proven, where supposedly everything evolved over millions of years in a futile attempt to remove the need for a creator, can there exist a festival that includes such things as flying reindeer, singing snowmen and elves, not to mention the existence of an overweight old man that can squeeze down chimneys and deliver presents to all the good children in one night? And yet, if you talk to the vast majority of people and tell them that you keep God's Sabbath or his holy days, we're the mad one. The reason is quite simple. The originator of Christmas is the same as the originator of the theory of evolution, who long before Darwin and Wallace published The Origin of Species had already deceived people for thousands of years with traditions that would later be attributed to the festival we now know as Christmas. Just put in your notes, John 8 verse 44, talking of Satan, he was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. Satan hasn't changed his tune since he first deceived Eve. Within a couple of generations of the flood, we have Nimrod and Semiramis, and the start of Mithras worship, and the foundation of the mystery religion, the Babylonian system that has gripped the world ever since. However, Christmas as it is celebrated in this age is more than just a modern version of Mithras worship. It has itself evolved over the ages as new pagan customs and more recently commercial influences have been taken and incorporated into its keeping. Other aspects of ancient Mithras worship are still visible today. The highest grade within Mithraism was Pater, and he wore or carried the symbols of a mitre, shepherd's staff, a garnet or ruby ring, a cape, and elaborate robes jewel-encrusted with metallic threads. This practice was subsequently incorporated into the position of the Pope to add extra authority to the ruler. In the booklet, The Plain Truth About Christmas, Mr. Armstrong explains very clearly how the date of the 25th of December was chosen, after much debate, to be the date for the festival, and how it brought together many pagan celebrations. I would strongly suggest another read through it if you haven't done so recently, as it goes into a lot more detail than I have the time for now. Although when these pagan festivals were first being incorporated or syncretized, there was a considerable amount of controversy about it. Within a few hundred years, however, the whole philosophy had changed. This was Pope Gregory's advice to St. Augustine upon arrival in Kent, in southeast of England, in AD 597. The idol temples of that race should by no means be destroyed, but only the idols in them. Take holy water and sprinkle it on these shrines, build altars and place relics in them, and if the shrines are well built, it is essential that they should be changed from the worship of the devils to the service of the true God. When this people see that their shrines are not destroyed, they will be able to banish their error from their hearts and be more ready to come to the places they are familiar with, but now recognizing and worshipping the true God. The church applied the same principles to the pagan festivals. They were not condemned. Instead, they were given an alternative Christian significance. Through the various home education groups we have attended over the last few years, we've met several confessed pagans, one witch, and a few others of non-conventional beliefs. The crazy thing is, they know all the roots of modern Christianity, and the general consensus is they want their days and their customs back. They are appalled how their days and rituals have been stolen and incorporated into Christianity. Turn, if you would, now to Deuteronomy 7, and we'll start to see the contrast with God's way of doing things. In Deuteronomy 7, we'll start right at the beginning in verse 1. Deuteronomy 1 verse 7, when the Eternal thy God shall bring thee into the land whither thou goest to possess it, and hath cast out many nations before thee, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than thou, and when the Eternal thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. For they will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. So will the anger of the Eternal be kindled against you, and destroy thee suddenly. But thus shall ye deal with them. Ye shall destroy their altars, and break down their images, and cut down their groves, and burn their graven images with fire. For thou art a holy people unto the Eternal thy God. The Eternal thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself, above all that are upon the face of the earth. There's not much in the way of giving an alternative Christian significance in that. Utterly destroyed. God has a very firm view on syncretism, just put in your notes Malachi 3 verse 6, "For I am the eternal, I change not." God's view is the same when it comes to the keeping of feast days. If you turn quickly to Isaiah 1, and we'll read verse 14 and 15. "Your new moons and your appointed feasts my soul hateth. They are a trouble unto me, and I am weary to bear them." And many times we've read that. Read verse 14. If we just go on and just read verse 15 as well now. "And when ye spread forth your hands, I will hide mine eyes from you. When ye make many prayers, I will not hear. Your hands are full of blood." Keeping feast days other than God's appointed feasts puts a barrier between the individual and God. He says, "I will not hear you." Right at the end of The Plain Truth About Christmas, Mr. Armstrong wrote, "Christmas has become a commercial season. It's sponsored, kept alive by the heaviest retail advertising campaigns of the year. You see a masquerading Santa Claus in many stores. Ads keep us deluded and deceived about the beautiful Christmas spirit. The newspapers who sell the ads print flowery editorials exalting and eulogizing the pagan season and its spirit. A gullible people has become so inoculated, many take offense when told the truth, that the Christmas spirit is created each year not to honor Christ, but to sell merchandise. Like all Satan's delusions, it appears as an angel of light, is made to appear good. Billions of dollars are spent in this merchandise spree every year, while the cause of Christ must suffer. It's part of the economic system of Babylon." There sure is a spirit of Christmas. It's a spirit of deception and comes from one source, Satan. Remember, for he is a liar and the father of it. What is worse is that a growing number of people accept that there is no Christian basis for Christmas and yet still go along with it. Whilst researching the material for this sermonette, and Paula mentioned something that happened to the sister of one of her work colleagues when she was a lot younger, which I think highlights the point entirely as to how people can be deceived willingly. The young girl, being probably 5 or 6 years old, really wanted a puppy. Not unusual. But she was quite specific. She wanted a pink poodle. This caused the parents quite a bit of concern until one day they bought a poodle and presented it to her as a very special poodle. This was a white pink poodle. The little girl was delighted. Not only did she get her pink poodle, but it was a white pink poodle. She had so set her mind on the fact that this was going to be a pink poodle that the very fact it was white meant nothing. This highlights how easily people can be deceived. We've heard it said many times that a deceived person doesn't know they are deceived, else they wouldn't be. But Satan's deception is so great that people are actively keeping Christmas knowing they're being deceived, writing off most of these little white lies as harmless fun. They have grown to love the lie, and this is a very dangerous position. Turning, closing, please, now to Revelation 22. And we'll read verses 14 and 15. Revelation 22, starting in verse 14. "Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have the right to the tree of life, and may enter in through the gates into the city. For without are dogs and sorcerers and whoremongers and murderers and idolaters, and whosoever loveth and maketh a lie."